My favorite, Jimmy Smith on his famous Hammond B3, and Stanley Turrentine on tenor sax, opening up Midnight Special. This is written and composed by Jimmy Smith, the title track of his 1961 album. Also featuring Kenny Burrell on guitar and Donald Bailey on drums. A really great group. Here. This is Lead Stories. I'm your Trace Lead, and it's Free Your Mind Friday. That's right. This is where the folks gather at the end of a week, having survived it, and we talk about things that are important. We talk about our own take on things, and after a while, you say to yourself, well, gee, are these people listening, the people who we're talking about, are they ever listening to what people are saying, and does it factor into what they do and say? It's amazing how it works. But this is where we talk among ourselves, and it's part of our way of decluttering our mind, getting a fix on things, exchanging ideas, information, etc. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. We're not moving. We're not losing any time, I should say. We're moving. Henry from Chicago starts us off today.
Hey, you Trace. How's it going?
Okay. How are you?
Well, I was doing okay, but I don't want to deter from the theme, because I want to blow off some steam. I know this is Free Your Mind, but I just really want to blow off some steam. Rahm Emanuel yesterday was announcing that he's going to put more money into corporate and government-sponsored mentoring programs, because he feels that the violence in our city is due because of the lack of fathers. And how many times have I heard this incident or heard these situations from other people who want to put, you know, this cookie cutter one answer thing of why we have so much violence in our community? And it just, like, really, really gets to me how ignorant these people are that don't really know exactly what's going on in our communities. And it just really blows my mind. I mean, out of respect for you, I would love to use some four-letter words, but it just really blows my mind that this guy and the people who run Chicago are so ignorant of the situation that's going on here in Chicago. I talk to these young men, and I talk to, you know, some of the young men who live in these communities, and if you're going to tell me, first of all, that all we have to do is solve the issue of fatherless children, then you're just out of touch with everything. And secondly, who says that African American men don't want to be fathers? Would you take a look at the prison system and see how many of these prisoners that are in jail who are fathers? And also too, I mean, there's a lot of factors going on with homes that don't have fathers. But just, you know, just this excuse or this one set answer of solving violence in our community, it just gets me sick to my stomach. I don't know what to do.
Well, here's the thing. Here's a question that I would ask. Rahm Emanuel's approach is really very predictable and very formulaic. You know, you lift up black pathology because everybody goes for it. The question is, I am sure that there are many black leaders in Chicago who are falling all over themselves to endorse this plan.
Oh. You just don't know.
I think I just answered my own question.
Yeah, you just don't know. And that's the bad thing about it. Some of these leaders come from these same communities. And that's the worst part about it.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And see, the message that comes out here is black men just don't want to be fathers. And that is so not true to the fullest extent. You know, because you know, okay.
Okay, Henry. We get it. But you know, this is a very serious issue. And it was, it's been a major criticism of mine when about the propensity of these harebrained schemes being put forward really as a way of seemingly it's about addressing a problem, but it really is about providing, you know, one of those race-based solutions that primarily come out of this whole notion of white paternalism and endorsing or underscoring pathology. We're helping you solve a problem. The message here, all these layers of meaning in what they're saying is we have to help you and we're going to help you because you have some problems here that you apparently can't help yourself with. So we'll come to your rescue. And it has to do with things like knowing how to be a good citizen, knowing how to be a good parent, how to obey the law, things like that. If you do these things, chances are the misery that you're experiencing, you won't experience it much. Now, I have the same criticism, by the way, of this Mothers of the Movement. The Mothers of the Movement, and I mean, I'm amazed that they have a name now. These are the women whose husbands and sons were cut down by police, killed by police, and they're now kind of like, you know, they dressed up and trotted out. I saw them looking almost like the Supremes, you know, all decked out and whatnot at a VMA awards concert or something like that to indicate that a serious side of the music event was, you know, some acknowledgement of police brutality and police killings. I get that. But it also underscores the same problem that you're talking about, the total absence of black men. Uh-huh. And this is being done by black people. You know, I'm sure somebody didn't think this all the way through.
Yeah.
What they're doing is they're underscoring this idea that there are no black men, and we don't need to worry about that because it's the strong black woman who is, you know, bearing the burdens of the black community. Not at all. I've talked about that also in reference to this notion of feminism. I'm not at war with men. I don't have a war against men. I come from a family with 8 men in my house. 8.
This underscores the message, like I was saying before, that black men don't want to be fathers. That is so not untrue. I've talked to gang members in our communities who are great fathers. I mean, they have some issues here, but there is no ounce of truth to that, where men don't want to be fathers. And when you talk about what I talked about, Rahm Emanuel, and you were talking about that message just goes across, because to me, as a black father, you know, I have to defend that because of the fact that I have. But Yatrice, it goes to the fact that everybody wants this one answer solution to the problems in our community. There is no one answer, and everybody wants to be the savior because nobody has their hand on the button on what is really going on, and nobody wants blame for what has gone on in the black community, not just the last couple of years, but for decades. And we're not just talking about, you know, drugs and the gang violence. You know, we're talking about redlining, we're talking about police terrorism, we're talking about all these other factors that nobody else wants to talk about. But just like you said, black folks are just not civilized as some people outside of our community would, you know, label us as. And that, you know, that just makes me so upset. I mean, really.
Well, this is the historic line. This is the historic line that informs a lot of what goes into our society. This is the thinking. The pathology is emphasized. This is part of the psychological conditioning, both for the white world to look at blacks in this particular way and for blacks to look at themselves this particular way. And this is it's calculated. It is a very calculated thing, because none of this, the suggestion that Rahm Emanuel has, addresses the question about his responsibility for shutting down schools, the unequal allocation of resources to certain communities in Chicago. Uh-huh. These are not the things that people should be discussing. What they should be discussing is how much more could we do to help black people just be human? Why are they so uncivilized? Why are they so, they account for the enormous crime rate, they're unemployed, they don't want to work. You know, Bill Clinton and his welfare reform that was predicated on, his criminal justice reform that created the largest prison system on the planet. This is what informs it. So I'm saying by now we should understand that this is how policies are formulated. The question is, we have people going along with this stuff. We have people championing this. That's like people running all over themselves to persuade us that Hillary Clinton is the best thing since sliced bread. I mean, really? And we don't challenge them on that. We don't say, listen, if that's your view, you've got to understand we can't support you any longer. You're on the wrong side of this issue. We can't support you. And you have to make it plain that it's reached a point where this is now warfare. This is not just an attitude, it's a kind of warfare. When people are singled out for derision constantly, for, you know, as examples of what's wrong with our society, when people are made as a people, this is a class act, a class action, I should say. Not a class act, but a class action. When you do this, by extension, you're saying all black people are this way, and people should not feel sympathetic when the police actions are intensified, when constitutional rights, alleged constitutional rights, are even further abridged. You shouldn't feel upset when the full force of the city and state come upon you. You have to contain black communities, seen, as I've been saying, like petri dishes full of bacteria, and you got to contain the bacteria. This is what the attitude has been for years, decades, as you said.
Exactly.
I have come to understand that this is the automatic, this is part of the system doing its predictable thing. What I prefer to concentrate on is, who are these people endorsing this and championing this along with Rahm Emanuel, standing with him and saying, this is really what we need. We need to be further oppressed. And this is a good idea. We embrace it. We support you for it and so forth. These are the people who need to be outed, and they need to be exposed for the damage that they are partnering in. Thanks, Henry, for getting us started, but don't let it consume you.
I'll try not to.
Okay, great.
All right.
From Brooklyn, Veronica, you're on the air. This is Lead Stories, and it's Free Your Mind Friday.
Good day. This is Veronica. How are you?
Beloved Fine, one. Thank you, Veronica. How are you?
Okay. I am just as Henry, very angry. I received an email concerning officers getting overtime, you know, after, you know, it's like a reward for shooting someone of color. Specifically, they were reviewing Pantelo, who was the gang leader in the chokehold of Eric Garner. And I specifically looked at how it would be only non-European officers that get overtime. He got $40,000 overtime with no gun. I thought of Desmond Robinson. I thought of the many officers who were gunned down in friendly fires, that nothing was friendly about it, shooting a superior officer because they were of color or otherwise. And it infuriates me that they allowed them to have overtime so that they can pay a lawyer, a doctor, take care of college fees for their children. But officers of color who have a relative that ends up in any of these situations, they don't get overtime. They, you know, they take their guns. They, you know, they treat them as enslaved people. And it is infuriating to read. And you know, I see why they attack the black press and the Ida B. Wells and the people that have done so much to bring to light. And the system is working just as it was set up to work.
And well, we Officer Daniel Pantaleo was one of several officers, but he was the officer who's principally blamed.
They all are
for putting Eric Garner into a chokehold that eventually killed him. So we've talked about Officer Daniel Pantaleo and the many privileges he enjoyed in terms of prosecutorial privileges that he enjoyed that the average person would not have enjoyed. For one thing, he was not, according to the contract that the city, the officers have with the city, it used to be called the 48-hour rule that an officer involved in a situation like that is allowed, I should say, to not cooperate, not answer any questions, not be available for questioning, even to a district attorney or any other authorized person for 48 hours or 2 working days, whichever works to his or her advantage. All of the officers involved were white. We know that Eric Garner, of course, has died. He's an African-American man. Well, here's a question. Again, I go back, and Henry put us on this map. This is the system behaving accordingly. It's running by design. The question I have is not about whether Pantaleo gets $40,000 of overtime. The question I have is, you have a city council that is majority people of color for the first time in history, really, and not once has this council as a body called into question the operations of the police department, not only in with respect to Eric Garner, but the Eric Garners of New York City. They have never questioned they've never demanded an audit, a forensic audit of the police department. How is the police department spending its money? The police department has been run all these years as its own government. Yet it is the city council that authorizes its budget and that should have the police commissioner and even the mayor on the carpet about the running of the police department in all these various areas where the lives of citizens of New York City, residents of New York City, are imperiled every single day, impacted every single day by these so-called administrative issues. Pantaleo, for example, it took a long time for him to be questioned. Why? Why? And I would dare say this even extends to the lawyers of the family, the Garner family, who were very, very eager to come to a settlement with the city of New York, but not at all eager to pursue justice. They still have not pursued justice here. And that's justice right. Would have entailed a lot of work. It would have entailed a great deal of courage to compel the city of New York to explain how it is that this particular tragedy could have resulted in no prosecutions at all. And the family, as part of its terms of settlement with the city, agreed to hold the city harmless. You see, there's a lot going on here. Now, this contrasts dramatically with the position of, say, Alton Maddox, who has created history in the court system by getting not one but two special prosecutors, independent special prosecutors appointed to investigate cases that were very controversial. But that was a lot of work. And he did it for no money. And he did it for justice. But that's you have right. These folks who are once, you know, a major killing or some major controversy has gone down, the Al Sharptons of the world, the Benjamin Crumps, the lawyers and so forth, who swoop in. I call them the collectors of bones. That's what they do. They swoop in. There is not yet on file any papers demanding a special prosecutor in this case. I've been talking about that on this program because that's not their interest. Their interest is, look, let's get some money. We learned just yesterday with Sandra Bland's family settling for $1 million. Okay. You settle for $1 million. Okay. I think, these settlements are provided by the law. I mean, they're part of the law. But in no way does it address the question of justice. And in a situation where the whole community, and I mean thousands and tens of thousands of people all over the country mobilizing to support the call and cry and demand for justice.
And no, it just turns like out, Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, it just turns out that the lawyers, called for these things, and Sharpton called for these things to shore up their demand at the table for more money. This is not about justice. We have no justice coming out of the Eric Garner case. None. There's no justice. In fact,
he's parading.
Huh?
He's parading. He gets to patrol in the same area. We've seen him patrolling in the same area since the killing. So it's a slap in the face three times.
It's worse.
And I'm
right now, as we speak, Veronica, you may be familiar with the fact that Ramsey Otter,
the person who filmed it all,
he is facing serious time in prison.
4 years.
He is facing
month.
4 years on trumped-up charges in prison. And it is clear that this is a hit. Where are the lawyers? Where are the people from the Garner advocacy group? Where are the mothers of the movement? You see, this is what my problem is. That in the end, it's about money. It's not about justice. These folks are not interested in the cause of justice. Just give us the money and we'll go away. And that's how they encourage the system to do what it does. We started the program today with Henry talking about what's going on in Chicago. The system is doing what it does. The question is, are you going to tolerate people encouraging this and touting this as a good idea and signing on to it and persuading the black community this is the way you ought to go? No. These are traitors.
They are. And I'm looking at two other people. I'm looking at Miss Rosario. She is an advocate for her child. She said, well, let's show up on these hollow days. She said, let's show up. We should show up at the officer's house, knock on Pantelletello's neighbor's house and say, you have a murderer living next door, because they look at us as a joke. And, it is amazing, because I'm going to switch to 96% of the people putting de Blasio into office, and he does not spend 0.9 is what he chooses to spend on black and Spanish speaking people. So we have no summer youth jobs, none of the issues that address gentrification and all these things. And this, as you say, it's about the money. You're sharing the money, but it does not reach the people that are advocating for police brutality and anything else. Because actually, when they said they're going to train these officers, they actually put more money into the police department. The people who get it are the people that are being abused. No, it's not the people getting abused. It goes right back to the abusers.
Well, some point, the community as a whole has to come to a determination about just how serious they are about their own freedom and justice. Just how serious are you? All of these things are happening, and people would say, well, look what they're doing to us. Well, why shouldn't they do it to you? You're allowing it. You are encouraging it.
Exactly.
You're supporting it. And it is in their interest, not yours. So if people continue to do that, like I said, you have a city council that for the first time in history looks like the city of New York. And not one of these people can get a piece of legislation passed. Not one. You can't get one to authorize the installation of a stop sign at the end of a block. Do you know who controls that? It's the law department. They decide whether you get a stop sign. And I encourage you to go visit the law department one day. And you will be stunned. It looks like apartheid South Africa. You can't find a Latino or black face in the law department of the city of New York, which appears to be stacked with the sons and daughters who barely got out of law school, of people who have connections with City Hall. They're the ones making the laws. They're the ones deciding who gets what. Yes, you have finally elected your local council member. Okay, great. Your local council member can't get diddly squat done. This is where the rubber meets the road. People have to get really serious. My favorite phrase was, you have to be ruthless and obsessive about your interests. There's no need to feel ashamed or to feel that you're being unreasonable. No, you're being quite reasonable to demand what you should be demanding, justice. But look at this situation. The people who should be out front on this thing to see it from beginning to end with the Garner case, they stopped. They stopped when all of that effort was organized, all of that protesting was going on. They capitalized on that in order to go to the negotiating table to arrive at a mutually agreeable sum. And after they got that, that was it. That's the end of that tune. So that there would continue to be more Eric Garners and more Pantaleos, the officers who would get away with killing people with impunity.
And get promotions.
So the community has to get serious about these things and act in a manner that suggests that you're serious. And really, this is hardball. This is not about politely asking for anything. This is making demands and backing it up. This is what we want, or else. Thanks, Veronica, for your call today. David from Brooklyn, also from Brooklyn. Okay, Brooklyn strong.
Morning, Trace. How are you?
Fine, thank you, David. How are you?
I have something important to say. It's going to be a 180 from what you've been talking about for weeks now. I want your audience who are praying for you, I want the rest of them to pray for you. But there's a specific way. I think you'd want to hear how. Are you still there?
Yes, I'm listening.
Okay. You direct the light with love to your trees. Because everything is light, and it's directed by love, and you pray directly to her with love. So how are you, by the way?
I'm hanging in. Pretty good so far.
That's why I'm calling with this. I want you to do better.
Thank you.
Everybody has to use love to direct the light to you, Therese, with, of course, intention of healing. And I'll make this very brief so other people get on. The book Synchronicity Key by David Wilcock. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
I think you should read it, and especially the rest of your listeners. I'm sounding like Bernie Sanders almost here. the way I'm hesitating. I can't read my teleprompter too good, so excuse me for that. Bad joke, but anyway. David Wilcock, The Synchronicity Key. It's a very important book. I'm in the middle of reading it, and it's mind-blowing.
And what are you learning so far?
It has a lot to do with the light and the love and directing it. And the healing, it's been scientifically proven. So I'm not just throwing this out in a vacuum.
What are you learning so far from the book?
That you have to forgive people and yourself, even for misdeeds, along with the love and compassion, and especially empathy. And a lot of people aren't willing to do that. Love is the key.
Okay, how do you, this is just a question, how do you, in a world where there are some pragmatic things that have to be done, for example, you choose a president, let's say, the choosing of a president, and you look around and you see what we've got.
We got
what?
Crap.
Huh?
We got crap.
Right. So how do you apply what you're learning to the situation, and how, if you apply what you're learning, what would your action be?
It wouldn't just be my action. It would have to be everybody's action.
Oh, okay.
It's the mess. I told you that before. I came up with a saying that, I forgot it already. The sum is greater than the one. So it has to be everybody's focus, love, and directing the light. But there is also karma. But we can't wait that long because these people are going to get their karma in the next life. But we can't wait that long.
Where are you coming from? You're being very spiritual today.
Yes.
Okay. Well, it happens that I think what you are advancing and the ideas that you are advancing, they certainly cannot hurt. They could only help. And we need as many things as possible that would help.
We need everybody to direct the light with the love. I don't know if it's going to work on the Cabal people because they have no empathy. That's why I'm saying calm will be in the next life for them.
Well, we shall see. But it's a great, you've given us a great subject to think about. Thanks so much for your call today.
The book.
Synchronicity.
Yes, The Synchronicity Key, David Wilcock. Oh, and okay. His website is divinecosmos.com.
Thank you. Thanks so much for your call today. 888-874-4888. I'm surprised that nobody's been talking about the big issue. The election. What's going on with Hillary Clinton's health? Do we believe her? Do you not believe her? What are you thinking? I don't know. But let's talk about that. 888-874-4888. This is where we come together. We've survived, we think, the week, despite everything that they've tried to keep us off kilter, we still managed to survive. We're still standing at the end of the week. So, okay. All right. I got a note that says that there might be a little technical problem with getting calls. They're trying to fix it. So that might be a reason why we haven't seen that many calls. We normally do get a lot of calls. But okay, we shall follow through. 888-874-4888. Just keep trying, and hopefully things will be up and running very shortly. These things happen, but we do the best we can to get them fixed in timely fashion. The phones are working. Right, the phones are working fine, and it's the website that we also are concerned with as well. Okay, so we have come to the end of this week. We covered a lot, and I want to prime you for next week. Next week is going to be pretty heavy for the Clintons. major things are going to be happening with regard to the Clinton Foundation and the questions that have not yet been asked officially with regard to prosecution of the Clintons and the relating to the conduct of the operations of the Clinton Foundation and its many, many subsidiaries. I know several journalists who are working on it, and these things are going to come to light. They cannot be stalled any longer. They've reached a point I would call of critical mass, and not just here in the United States, but around the world, governments are beginning now to ask questions because there is a major problem. But the amounts of money certain governments have given the foundation and the amounts of money the Clinton Foundation reported as receiving, there's a lot of money missing. And what is amazing to me is how, in the middle of all of this, the media simply will not deal with the question. It is the central question that brings to bear the scrutiny, one would think, of Hillary Clinton as a presidential candidate. And this would be the reason for subjecting her to very close questioning. But they are ignoring it. The people who are doing the work journalistically, for the most part, are coming from conservative media or right-of-center media, but they're doing the job. The CNNs and the MSNBCs and the mainstream media, they have taken a hands-off position with Hillary Clinton. It's as if these major questions do not exist. They don't exist. They are fully tied into it. And I suspect, I have no definitive copies of checks and whatnot written and before me, but as I said, a lot of this coverage is linked to the amount of money that these media organizations are receiving in terms of advertising, campaign advertising, political advertising. And it is not to shock you that one of the reasons that you get a lot of these favorable reports from one station and unfavorable reports from other stations, especially about where the campaigns, the respective campaigns are, has to do with money. You're not spending money with us, we're not covering you. Or you're not spending as much money as the other guy, so we're covering the other guy, giving him far more favorable coverage or far more frequent coverage. But it's money. This is where the media organizations make a lot of money. And this is what in turn determines frequency of coverage and quality of coverage. So we are in the middle of it, and they're acting as if this business with the Clinton Foundation, it just does not exist. But you have been hearing some things here on Lead Stories, I'm sure, that are blowing your mind. We have somebody say $100 billion at least $100 billion. And it doesn't amount to much in the media. Something is wrong. CC from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Yes. Thank you, Beatrice.
Thank you.
And me. Yeah. I want to just first say that I and we appreciate you. We're learning.
Thank you.
And you're doing a great job. I mean, you've always been doing a great job. You're so needed. This work that you've been doing has come to a place of compounding where we're needing it to make sense of ourselves.
Wow, thank you so much. That's quite a compliment. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah. I didn't tell you that. What I didn't tell you that I wanted to tell you is that you are loved. And so, you know, that's... I agree with the gentleman recommending the book. that love is the power, you know, for all of us in our healing process and journey. You know, the Clintons, I mean, you know, yourself and Charles Ortel have done something that we can't even measure. But there was one way of measuring, because about a few weeks ago, the people that were calling in were people that we've never heard before, you know, that have, you know, been led or have been attracted to lead stories. And there are people that are, you know, don't intend to call, but they intend to learn, you know, from this reporting, this fine reporting that you're doing. The situation is, it seems like there's a theme here, and that is, you know, I've said it before, if it's to be, it's up to me. We really have to organize. And I hate to be ethnic, but I think we got to take a page out of the Jewish playbook and how they work politics, or politrics, I'm going to call it. If we look at the, you know, maybe the Asians and, you know, how they have achieved what they've achieved, and that is that we've got to really, you know, from the woman in Staten Island to Chicago call today, the bottom, and you stated it in the fact that we've got to unite. And I basically feel that our churches, our synagogues, our shuls, our masjids, our houses of worship and temples could change this whole thing if we got out of the fear of what the loss might be of, say, tax benefits and so forth and so on, because we could stop the situation, because that's where a great amount of people, a faith-based, are organized. We're organized there. We go someplace, not the majority maybe, but we go some particular place. But in organizing, and I say I take a page out of the Jewish playbook, and we've got to get organized, because that's the reason that the Staten Island guy can, you know, get extra 40,000 in overtime. This is the reason why it's happening everywhere. Chicago, it's almost like it's something that we get because of what we did not do, or what we did do or did not do. And let's learn from it, and let's recognize it, because we're expecting something that is, they call it getting it, good in theory, not in practice. We're expecting something that cannot really happen if we don't happen. That's where the rubber meets the road. I mean, we've got to come to a place where we are, you know, as President Obama got elected, there were house parties, gatherings, you know, we've got to have gatherings. Each one reach one. Go five doors up the street, or down the street, or go five apartments down the street, and on your floor, get somebody to take the other floor, and take each one, you reach one. And we take floor by floor by floor. And really, this election is in the swamp. It's in the sewer. 2020, we may end up what we end up with, but 2020 is the one that we've got to be mastering for, and that's what I've invested in 2020. I'm going to vote for 2016, but 2020 is the real deal. We were asleep at the post, and we've been asleep at the post for a long time. And the thing is that we've got to get off our assets and get involved. And we've got the numbers. The numbers are here. We can make the difference. And we've just got MAD, make a difference, get mad. We've got to get mad enough to make a difference. We can't just talk about it. It's action. And so that's the story. And I appreciate all that you have been doing over the years, and then to get to this particular place. And, you know, what is happening, you know, the media I've been watching, in the tank. And the tank is big. And so, you know, And we need to do something also together at some level to increase the listenership of lead stories. And we can do that, by organizing. Yeah, we can do that. We get a free conference call, a free conference pro. Certain people, we give up some email addresses, and then we start to expand on each one, reach one. We get 10 people, and then there's 100. And so it's not difficult. It's simple. We just got to, the thing we have to do is commit and get dedicated. That's really the deal. So that's my mind.
Thank you for your many suggestions today, and certainly for your good wishes. Thank you so much for that.
You're quite welcome. Keep up the great work, Eutrice.
Thank you. Edgewater, we have you on the air.
Hi, Eutrice.
How are you?
I'm doing okay, dear. I just want to thank you for Monday after the show, your kind words that you had for me. Really did a lot for me.
We are going to come back to the question again next week, because a lot of stuff is going to be happening with the Clinton Global Initiative having its last meeting over this weekend. So we will be catching up on what happened at this last meeting, and a lot of other news would be breaking by then.
Beautiful. And thanks for Charles O'Tell. It was great information. I hope somehow we can get them on this charity thing. I just wanted to throw in a few things. I think that she's playing possum with this being sick thing, so she doesn't have to do any press conferences and stuff. And she'll probably even cancel debate when they're coming up. There should be a debate coming up soon, right? She'll probably claim that she's not feeling good. And then maybe Obama and Bill will fill in for her, since Obama seems like he's running for president again in her place. Yes.
Yeah.
If she can't make it, then they throw Obama
in. I had to pinch myself
in
the other day saying, wait a minute, didn't you run twice already? Are you still stumping? Aren't you leaving?
He's still looking for those two more years that Dick Gregory was talking about. And Dick Gregory also feels there's two Donald Trumps. He has a double. So the red tie Trump is the real Trump, and the one with the blue tie is his double. So when he went to Mexico to talk to the president, like you said, what was he doing there? He's not the president. What's he do? Suppose something happened. That shows you how rigged things are. This was all rehearsed, and whenever Trump needs to get a boost in the polls, they let him do something that looks important. And then this is what happened. Now it's tied again. So then when they need him to drop a little, he'll say some stupid thing again, and then everybody will like Hillary more again. That was Dick Gregory's thing with the Trump thing. So he was able to go to Mexico, talk with the president, and then later on in Phoenix, that was the body double Trump with the blue tie. That's just something for people to be aware of. So with that, she's making believe she's got some sickness. And
there's also a pink tie. He wears pink ties a lot.
Wears a pink tie, too. Maybe that's the third one in case the double's not feeling well. Then he's got another guy even there to fill. Maybe Hillary has double, too. I don't know. Sometimes she goes from having pneumonia, and then all of a sudden, the other day, she's fine again.
How stupid do they think people are? You have pneumonia, and it's pretty serious because it's causing you to fall out. And within half an hour, with pneumonia, you can be back on the sidewalk waving at fans. All right. Well, that's a pretty peculiar kind of pneumonia. Look, there's something wrong with Hillary. And it's not pneumonia. It's something pretty serious, because we've seen the record of all these falls that she has had. And the blue glasses from people I've talked to, the blue sunglasses that she was wearing on that day were a major, major hint. And usually people who are having problems with their motor skills, owing to whatever is afflicting them, they wear that color, that deep blue. It helps to orient them, because a lot of what goes on that makes people unstable is, you know, the eyesight. So the glasses kind of get them to focus on a particular point of where they're going. That's not pneumonia. Did you see her stiffen up there?
Yeah.
She's stiffened up.
You think it could possibly be vertigo or something like that? Like a vertigo?
No, vertigo is easy. This is a big problem. She literally, she didn't just collapse. She stiffened up. If you have pneumonia and you suffering from dehydration, you collapse. You become rubbery. You become flexible. She was stiff as a rod. And then when she started buckling, that's not pneumonia. I don't care what they say. And, you know, of course, we're talking Hillary Clinton here, the inveterate liar. So everybody around her is interested in protecting the massive amount of lies being told about her health. She's not in good health, plain and simple. That is not pneumonia. You don't, and if it weren't pneumonia, here's a simple question. If somebody has a serious illness, pneumonia, they're right near a hospital. Why didn't they take her to a hospital? They take her to Chelsea's apartment to recoup from pneumonia? Come on.
That's why I think that she was just playing possum, because it just seems like she doesn't want to do too much in this election. She wanted Bernie to carry the torch, and now she's letting Donald Trump do all the work.
No, so I think it is that
I thought it was a convenient way of getting out of having to do anything, because, you know, no, she writes the story how to become the president without really trying, and she wants to stick to that plan.
I think she really has the plan to make history. This is something that has been driving her ambitions for a long time. The plan had been made for a long time for her to proceed with the campaign. She is dead set on making that thing happen, that historical marker happen. And she has been ill for a long time. Nobody could tell me otherwise. That right. is not pneumonia, and there's no logic. You have collapsed. You have collapsed at a public event. You can't even walk on your own. And you know, they say, well, she was diagnosed a couple of days before with pneumonia. And you reach the point where you're collapsing, and yet they're taking you to your daughter's apartment, and then a couple of hours later, you're out back on the street, you know, waving like nothing ever happened. It's so clear. Everybody knows, the people around her know what this illness is. They're prepared to deal with it. They have been dealing with it for a long time. It is not an emergency situation. It's a chronic problem, which means that they expect things like this to happen. This is not something that just happened out of the blue. And she stiffened up. You would normally collapse. Well, we've reached the end of our program today. Thanks so much for everyone for calling. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Let me know what you think. Have yourselves a great weekend with positive people. We see each other Monday. Bye-bye.